The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 7th of June, 2022, 14 days after the long holiday weekend started. We're finally pulling ourselves out of it. Good morning. Good morning to my guest co-host this morning, Mr. Mark Palmer. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
I don't know where you've been, but I'm glad that you're back.
I've been swimming.
Yeah, you think I's a conk, eh? You've been gone for 2 weeks. All you've been doing is swimming?
Trying to get here with all this rain, right?
Listen, dear sir, I know that you's a Bahamian now because you conking me. You trying to conk me.
That's the verb now.
It has become a verb, I've been told. Yeah. Young people told me it was a verb. Dear Bahamas, language is continually expanding. Don't mind people like me. I grew up deeply ensconced in British culture, went to QC, grown by people who were British for most of their life, right? Mm-hmm. At the time. Don't be moved by people like me who have a visceral response when people say things like females and fruits and sheeps, right? That's me. I have to work on that. That's my entrenchment. Forced or, you know, voluntary entrenchment in British culture and British system. But language is constantly and always evolving, right?
That's true.
And young Bahamians and old Bahamians alike are constantly evolving Bahamian language. So I learned recently through a series of voice notes, Mark, that conk is now a verb. And the young lady said, I'm sure she said, so what you think happened? You think you gonna conk me? And it hit me. It hit me, Mark. I was in the food store last week. I was looking at a discount trolley because I intend not to be a conk, right? That's conk as a noun. I intend not to be a conk. So I'm always in the discount trolleys. And I saw this bag of tangerine, just glorious golden, you know, mini nuggets of gold. They have to be gold because they cost a ton. And I saw a member of staff, my peripheral vision, and they were also looking in what I thought was a discount trolley. And I looked up and I said, oh, good morning, ma'am. I said, you know, and I picked up the bag. I said, you know, if these are on discount. And the woman looked at me and said, you can't see I just come to work here. And it was, and then I realized that my appropriate response to her should have been, miss, you waking the producer, not me. Don't conk me. I supposed to conk you. Don't conk me, miss. Anyway, I think it means try to conk is, I wrote it down somewhere, right?
To get one over you?
Right, or, you know, it's like to embarrass me maybe, or to take advantage of me. I think that's what it is, to take advantage of somebody, like, I don't want to work, or like, because I mean, it's cool. You're in the Bahamas, I get it. You don't want
to
work.
We need to get that Patricia Michaelis on the show. She'd be able to tell you a little bit more about that.
Who's this before I get conk? I conk myself. by saying the wrong thing. Oh, Patricia McCullis.
Yeah.
We need to figure out how to put it in the dictionary.
Right, right.
Yeah, you know, the next version of Yina.
Right.
Yina, don't call me a conk. Certainly don't try to conk me. Don't serve me in no conk salad. Don't mix me up like conk salad. Just remember me when we finalize the new entry into the Bahamian dictionary. To conk. Noun, a conk. Verb, to conk. And I think even a, an adjective.
Yeah.
You're looking a little, carrying on a little conky there. Don't let these people take advantage of you.
A conky Joe. Now that is an adverb, right?
No.
That's a
no, Mark.
Adjective.
No, it is a descriptor. Some people would call it a slur. And then I would remind them.
But it's a conky. It's a Joe and a conky Joe, right?
Right. No, Mark. I have to call Dr. Chris Curry. Because first of all, people don't really... It's a bit of a delicate conversation. Mm-hmm. Conky Joe is a term that we common day use to refer to people of mixed race from places like Long Island and Abaco, Eleuthera sometimes. Conky Joe is a term that was coined, that was created by, it would be like the loyalists that came here. See, when they came here, they weren't the first set of Europeans to get here. When they came here, they would have met the descendants of the Lutheran adventurers and the people who came before them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When those loyalists came here, they had to establish a hierarchy of power because like it's almost as if it's in their blood, like they have to have a power system. But when they came here, they wanted to establish a hierarchy of power. And so those European descent people who at the time were beginning to refer to themselves as white, right? They looked at the European descent people who were here before them, who had darker skin because of the culture and their lifestyle. Conking is one of the things that they did, pulling conk, right? And so they were in the sun and they were darker skin. And so that's where the term was coined. Conky Joe, referring to the settlers, the loyalists would have met here. So today, some people like to say, hey, this term Conky Joe, we don't like it. It's a slur, right? And then I say to them, I'm not sure if we could call it a slur because it was a term created by Europeans to, in a sense, denigrate other Europeans and create a hierarchy of power. Now, if you're saying, okay, so in this hierarchy of power, they were trying to say that the Conky Joes are not as white as us. They are in the category of black, because at that time, there wasn't real gradation, right? There was like, either you're white or you're black. You could say, well, maybe it was a slur then, but is it a slur? But let me see, you say it's a slur then, is it a slur now? Is it a slur now if people of African descent are using it to describe other people of African descent? And is it a slur if the people who are using it think that the people they're applying it to are the ones who created it?
Do you hear it? I don't really hear it. I mean, I used to hear it much more back in the day. I'm talking like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But now if you're describing someone, you would probably call them bright-skinned or something like that. But I never saw it as a slur. Mm-hmm. It was more like a, I don't know, term of endearment, but depending from which way it came, you know.
Right. And I always, growing up before I was introduced to the formal coinage, right, like how it was created, I used to think like, okay, look at the conch. You know, it's white, mainly white, but
peachy.
It got that nice little color in it, and the color bring it, you know, variety and diversity and make it taste different, and it's great, right? I never really thought of it as a slur, but then I live in a neighborhood where there are a lot of people of Long Island descent, or Long Island people moved to Nassau, and a number of young people expressed displeasure with the use of the term.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes it was sort of like how young black people will use the term, and we're using this term now, you know, the N-word. Just be polite. You say the N-word, and they say, well, look, we could use it. we could use it talking among ourselves and to ourselves, right? We take umbrage or offense to other people applying it to us without our permission, or you're not, you know, in the wrong context, or you ain't a part of the group. And so you'd hear some people use it, and then some people can't, and some people can. But what's important to note, like, it's important to recognize that some people are uncomfortable with the term.
Yeah.
You know? And so you measure how you use it, and don't use it to insult or denigrate, you know, or degrade a person or a group of people or a category of people. You know, in the same way we can use the N-word for academic purposes,
right,
and for public discourse in measured ways, is the same way you don't use the word unless you absolutely, absolutely have to for the purposes of the conversation or the thing you're trying to convey. Yeah. But Mark, don't let nobody conk you.
Okay, all right.
Right? It's summertime. Don't let these people talk about, look here, if you buy 3 for $5, that's 1 for me and 2 for me and 1 for you. And then look, we're all happy. Don't let nobody... Because they're trying to do it to me, Mark.
Yeah.
They're trying to do, and I think sometimes.
But you did math, right? So you could figure it out.
I did math, and I did PLP math. I am a consummate mathematician.
Okay.
But I think conversation is important. We're going to get into some headlines, right? Mm-hmm. Some real headlines. But sort of rolling off a Labor Day is the perceptions are important. Spatial awareness is important, right? And like that incident with the member of staff. Who said to me, hey, you can't see, I just come to work, right? Like, for a moment, I wanted to express to her and her superiors just how egregious, don't even hit the egregious, that's how you're supposed to pronounce it, egregious, right? It don't even hit the mark. And some people in this town, you know, they hit full Karen mode, right? Which is like, I need to speak to your manager. Mm-hmm. You're going to get fired. I mean, it's a ridiculous thing to tell a customer, you know. It's just total madness, almost like you're looking for a fight. I don't know, though, in 2022, if our workforce generally, right, like if they sort of get that, if they have the spatial awareness or if they have the capacity for it, right? Like if they could, even if they understood what we were talking about, if they had the ability to sort of sit themselves in it, they just are under tremendous amounts of stress. Now, I don't know what's causing the stress. That's not my reasoning. Once you're in stress, that's what's important to note, right? Once you're in crisis, that's what's important to note. Then we look at what caused it. But in our customer service relations, right, people, staff, employees, it appears as if they feel like you, the customer, are trying to conk them in these very basic transactional dynamics, right? And so if you feel like I'm trying to conk you, I could understand why you're upset, you know? If you feel like somebody's trying to take advantage of you in this situation, I could see why you are angry. And if you constantly feel like that because every transaction you engage in as an employee leaves you feeling like that, I can understand how
it must be projection. That's the only explanation I can have for that.
Tell me more.
Every time, you know, that you're projecting your own neurosis on the other person, right?
Right.
So if you feel taken advantage of, maybe you're the type of person that takes advantage of other people, right?
Yeah.
And then you're very much more sensitive. You see that in others.
Yeah. And I think maybe people are so frustrated in their working environments, you know, come on, Bombers, it's 2022. I'm 45. And this is a dynamic I think we need to acknowledge, that very few of our systems are functional, are healthy, functioning systems.
You think it's somebody taking their frustration out of you because of their work environment?
Right, but I think it's compounded. Like, if we look at the police force, right, and we see that there's a lot of anti-police sentiment rising again, with police shootings, police killings, a lack of justice or justice being seen to be done, right?
And transparency.
And
transparency.
And accountability. But when you look at the force, if you have been paying attention for the last 30 years, then you realize that issue after issue after issue has been raised by police unions, by a staff association, by members that have not been addressed. Matters that have not been resolved, right? And so you could sit and get mad at the police, but you also have to acknowledge that the police have been on a go slow for 30 years. They've been in a unofficial protest for 30 years. What we have is not a functioning force. But if you are a young officer, you come into the force, mm-hmm. and you stop for a moment, and you say, but how are we supposed to do all of this with so little resources, manpower, strategy, policy, cohesion, solidarity? Then you'd think that somebody trying to conk you too.
I remember a friend of mine saying that he felt that that the commissioner was never fully in charge of mm-hmm. the entire police force. Now, he gave a figure of 80%. Now, I don't know if that's fair or not. I don't know how he came to that suggestion, but it's really a question of leadership. You know, if you mentioned about mm-hmm. shootings and things. I remember this, years ago, there was somebody died in custody. Now, this was a long time ago, mm-hmm. like 10 years ago, and it took the commissioner a month before he made a statement. Mm-hmm. And I remember at the time that seemed so odd to me that mm-hmm. they couldn't come out the next day. And I think that kind of breeds resentment, that they
Absolutely.
Feel that they're not being totally transparent, or there's something else. It makes you come up with conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
When there isn't an immediate response, even if they said, we're investigating it and we'll get back to you, but there was zero. And I remember also a time when they had, politically connected people were involved in activities and mm-hmm. 6 weeks before the police would come and interview them. And I think people feel that they're like two different sets of justice or wheels of justice. That
absolutely. Absolutely. I think for the political class, politicians, you say, call it the oligarchy, right? The, mm-hmm. the politicians, the political class, and the merchants and the merchant class, I think it's important for them to see, to overstand, like Rasta would say, the environment in which they rule, either economically or legally mm-hmm. and politically, and
so they're hot potatoes. They're hot potatoes that you're not allowed to touch, right?
Well,
I mean, when I lived in England, there were places the police just didn't go. There were these no-go zones. Uh-huh. And people were like shocked. You know, there were literally zones that the British police would not enter because it's just too dangerous for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that, that's one perspective I was going to say, that it's important for them to realize that the Bahamian people are feeling like somebody thinks that they are conk. They're feeling like somebody is conking them, not taking them seriously, not taking seriously the dynamic that underpins their relationship. I think it's important for both, the merchant class and the political class to understand that the people can speak and express themselves. And if you refuse to acknowledge what they're saying, they will continue to develop language, right? Just because they're poor don't mean that they don't have sense.
Mm-hmm.
And their lives and culture and everything will continue to evolve. And they are speaking clearly to you. And they're telling you, don't conk us. If anybody is the conk here, it ain't me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important, particularly for the fuel and the power industry. How is it with one side of your mouth you can be celebrating record profit earning in a period where people are expecting that same commodity that's being traded, the retail price, to go up to $8? Somebody is the conk in this situation. Now, my good friends say, conk and mango don't grow on the same tree. So we need y'all to know we ain't stupid. Conk and mango don't grow on the same tree. And there are many other issues. That's why I wanted to sort of delve into some, mm-hmm. some local news and some foreign news. They all tie together in mm-hmm. some way. But Mark, let's take a moment and get to this caller on the line, because mm-hmm. they've been flashing for a second. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Hello, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'd like to say that this is another day of deprivation for the poor. And like you're talking about conking them. I like the word, like to use the words of Malcolm X. They take poor people for chumps, you see. And it's time they stop, you see. They love to talk about paying the poor people's salaries and not want to open their books to their profits, you see. Mm-hmm. Employers need, in another way, they want the lion's share of the profits. They don't, you know what I'm saying? The employee always have to take the losses, you see. Mm-hmm. And it's time that stops. Thank you much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, just a note here. I have to say, dear Bahamian employee, sometimes you do in for more. Sometimes, I mean, I stand with the workers. I stand with the laborers, right? There's virtually, like, there are very few situations, virtually no situation where I can just say, look here, fire them, throw them away. That don't make any sense. But some of y'all employees, I mean, y'all trying to get an Oscar for comedy gold. Like, y'all just trying, y'all just pushing the line. Sometimes y'all just do some things that make people hold their head and really want cuss, you know. Dear Bahamian employee, I mean, sometimes y'all are just amazing. But what I'm going to say is this. At the same time, it is still unfair. It's in the same way, it is unfair to say that the single individual citizen can pull himself out of a housing crisis that has affected a country for more than 30 years, right? Like, it's unfair to expect that one man to pull himself out of that. I will say to the Bahamian employee, look here, it's tremendous pressure on the plantation. It is a plantation. And don't ever think for once I'm suggesting that you need to shine your shoes and put that black towel on your face and smile up in Master's face. I'm not suggesting that. But what I am saying is that at some point, you understand that we get the governments that we deserve. That's why we learn to govern ourselves. And that applies within the space of work. Right? Absolutely. Mark, I see you wanted to jump in. Jump in!
Well, I was in the States recently, right?
Yeah.
And you expect to get good service, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, generally when you go to a restaurant, you get quite good service. You know, people are trying to get tips. They don't get the automatic tips like we do here, 15%.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found is I didn't think I had very good service. I was thinking back, you know, comparing it to my experience here, it was not that different. And the big difference I noticed is when you go to the States, you know, certain people don't look at you.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have a Bahamian, you go into a Bahamian shop, they look at you in the eye, they engage with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get any of that. They were like multitasking, or they would look at you right at the very end when they would give you something.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that was really, this last time, I just wanted to feel what the cultural vibe I was getting from the States, because normally I'm too busy doing stuff. And I was really quite shocked.
Yeah,
I didn't get any good service, and you know, I needed to get some Wi-Fi in a place.
Yeah.
It was Avis, actually.
Yeah.
They wouldn't give it to me, and there,
wow,
I'm a potential customer. They weren't interested. Now, in the Bahamas, the lady would have given me her phone,
yeah,
or given me a hotspot, or said, honey, text me that, or do this or do that, we could work it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think the service is that much greater in the States than it is here.
Well, I would...
Not as warm, anyways.
Right.
I think you get a much, much warmer service here in the Bahamas.
And I hope I didn't suggest that or leave...
No, I don't think you did.
...for that, because I would agree with you.
Yeah.
In my travels across the U.S. and across Europe.
Yeah.
I let people know, look here, I'm from the Bahamas. My expectation is
right.
Very high. Right? And so, like, if I smile, I chuckle when we talk about the Queen, and I say the Queen is my cousin, right? It's not because I'm trying to hobnob. It's because my expectations are high. And I celebrate the Bahamas. I tell people, no, when you come to the Bahamas, then you'll understand what I'm talking about. But I think we have younger generations of Bahamians who have been robbed of this experience, right? Because... You have to have served someone and experience this. Like, I've experienced it all the time. I've served people, and at the end of that experience, like, I want to say to them, like, thank you, but serving you I'm a better person. Not to say I'm a better, because you're talking about right. Nobody's better than the other, right? But there's a degree of not even pride, but of empowerment that I feel providing a service. I'm not serving you. I'm serving the country, the wider tourism product. Mm-hmm. I'm filling in for somebody who relies on this as their bread and butter. And I feel empowered that I can do it and leave you and have you leaving here feeling empowered.
And it's true because, I mean, I do part-time walking tours, food tour. And I've had a lot of connection with our particularly American visitors. And one thing they always say to me is how warm the people are and how much time they have for you. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we can often look back home and say, you know, there's a lot of things that aren't right, you know, things that we're not happy with. But, you know, you have to travel and you'll see we're actually not that bad. Mm-hmm. We are actually, in some ways, we're so much better than other places I've traveled to.
Yeah. And I wonder if our government, I like to call it quote-unquote comparative governance. Mm-hmm. It's like they go somewhere and they, the Obama's doing much better than them in all these categories. Yeah. And they come back home and they're like, I'm doing a great job, man. I'm doing a great job. I mean, if you see what they're doing down there, right? And that, like, that's how they assess their performance. But we are, in many instances, I don't know if we're performing better than or if the consumer experience is better than, right, in other places, or if those two are not mutually exclusive, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not exclusive.
Now, you did mention the Queen, right?
Yeah.
So I was, the Queen's Honor, you know, the Queen's Honors came out recently, and I would, first thing I did, I looked to see if your name was on it.
Listen, that's nepotism.
That's the first thing. I was so disappointed when I didn't see.
Mark, that's nepotism. That's an old Bahamian culture. That's not new Bahamian. The Queen can't give me an honor because I'm her cousin.
Right, right.
All
right. Okay.
That's my break music. That's good because you know I was about to talk some more. But when we get back from the break, we're going to delve into the Queen's Honors, the local honors, and then also the Queen's Jubilee. She's been getting a lot of honors, and even the people in Britain are asking for ACR, annual confidential report for the Queen. Anyway, stay tuned to Guardian Radio. We've been chopping it up a little bit. We're going to get into some local issues when we get back from the break. You're on the clock with Erin Green and my guest co-host on this.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Preparing for a hurricane can make all the difference in safeguarding lives. By knowing what actions you should take to reduce the effects of hurricane disaster, get all the facts of the potential of having insurance, impact-resistant windows, home emergency power, surge protectors, essential supplies, plus so much more before the storm, after the storm, where to purchase building or cleaning supplies, waste disposal, medical care, which auto shop to go to after driving through flooded streets, and more. The Nassau Guardian's Hurricane Guide will help to make sure everyone knows what to do in the event a hurricane approaches. Take advantage of this double insertion opportunity, plus 15 radio commercials. Contact us today at 302-2300 or your account executives. Will you be prepared?
The most important thing in life is family. And whenever you need reliable advice, you look to the people you know you can trust. At J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, we earn our clients' trust every day. Whether it's home, motor, travel, or commercial insurance, we've got you covered. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
Mr. Johnson trying to find Freddie and Margaret looking for Lil. They look all around on Bay Street, Baintown, Palmdale, and over the hill. Cross the bridge to Paradise Island, but alas, to no avail. So they all come to one conclusion, they're in Freeport or they're in jail. So if you're looking, searching, and worrying, you'll find it's true without any fail. If you can't find your friends in Nassau, they're in Freeport or they're in jail.
Good morning. Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Aaron Green. I've got Mark Palmer in studio this morning. Listen, Mark, as I was scooting up to the station this morning, flying, because you can't drive slow in the flooded water, right? I saw one video. I wasn't driving, mind you. I was just flying. I was in passenger seat. I saw this video of this car speeding through the water, and then it caught fire.
Whoa.
Right, and so I was very, very concerned about that. You know, before the end of the show, we'll talk a bit about this new world, this water world. Kevin Costner knew what he was talking about 20 years ago. But if you can't find your friends at Regatta, Mark, they're in Freeport, or they just may have been in Switzerland at one of these two high-power world meetings. At the end of May, there was the World Economic Forum. They call that the Davos meeting. In Davos, Switzerland, and there was the that meeting was postponed from January, and then there was the 75th World Health Assembly, Geneva, Switzerland. I mentioned that because a number of people online had been talking about it, and wanted to know, like, there's this big conspiracy that there was a big decision made at the 75th World Health Assembly, and from the research that I've done so far. I don't know how the Bahamas voted at the meeting because I don't think there was a specific vote.
No, the last vote was taken in 2005. That was the last time those IHR, the International Health Regulations, were changed, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
But the U.S. put in some amendments this year to change them. And, of course, that got all the... there was this hashtag stop the, I forget what was that, there was a hashtag stop the treaty, right?
Right.
That was trending because of that, because people felt that they were giving away their sovereignty to this unelected bureaucrats at the World Health Organization.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I did a little look into it. It wasn't, you know, the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And the reason that the amendments were put in by the U.S. was really to punish China, because China didn't... so, for example, you know, when they asked the Chinese for the data, they didn't give the data, the genome for the virus.
Yeah.
And then they refused to do something else for a month. So this is they're trying to tighten up the IHR, because at the moment, there's really no punishment.
So the IHR is?
The International Health Regulations.
I got you.
Which of WHA. Yeah. And so the Chinese didn't comply. So this is a way of trying to make country, to give the WHO some power, policing power. So either through sanctions or some other ways.
Yeah.
And of course it backfired, because all the countries that were friendly to China, the 47 African states, Brazil,
did they all abstain?
India, they read a statement saying they were not going to comply with the amendment, and that basically threw everything into a little hissy fit, because they tend to only vote on these things if they feel there's going to be 100% unanimity, and they have a mechanism then they can go to a majority, 2/3 majority, but they felt they weren't even going to get that because of the African states.
Right.
And so there's a lot more to it than we see.
They play politics everywhere, man.
It's incredible, isn't it? And so that's really the truth behind it. But it was kind of perceived as a different thing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, absolutely. I was in a panic when I saw the energy, the urgency people were demanding, pay attention. And when I finally paid attention, I was like, oh, listen, this is one of those red tape things, right? Like, there may be more red tape than is useful in the matter. But listen, I got two calls on the line, Mark.
Go for it.
Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Good morning, caller.
Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, absolutely.
I just wanted something that you alluded to, which I never thought about. As you said, the service that we get from any sector, rather, in the country, and especially the tourism industry, Bahamian people, particularly to restaurants and other places, I thought that was very interesting what you said, that you're not just serving to make money for yourself, but you're also serving the excellence for that establishment, and also an extension to the country.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about it like that. I felt that was a very good observation. But the thing is, right, we have to understand that training is the order of the day. We must train our people to understand that when you are serving a guest or a Bohemian, you must serve with a level of excellence, and that comes through repetition of training.
Mm-hmm.
You have to leave your reality TV, whatever you think that is, or you have to leave your problems or whatever, you have to leave that to the door or leave that home, because you can't bring that on the job, especially when you're in the service industry. And I like the fact that when I see my Bohemians, especially when I go out, and I get very ignored sometimes when a Bohemian don't serve Bohemians with excellence. Now, they'll serve probably the guests with excellence, but when it comes to Bohemian, they seem to less like, okay, he's a Bohemian, we'll get him later. No, you serve me as you serve the guests of other nations in this country, because it makes me proud when I see that level of service being given to me. It makes me proud to be a Bohemian.
Yeah.
When I see you doing that to other Bohemians as well as to the guests. And I think that people have to understand that the Americans in an inflationary period now, and probably heading into a recession. So the reality is you have to start looking at other ways to do things within the restaurant or the hotel industry or whatever industry or business you are in right now, because most of our dollars depends on the dollar. Now, we have the Chinese coming in, and that's good. But by and large, we depend on North America for a lot of our tourists, especially tourists, dollar. I think that was very interesting what you said. To extension, you are not just serving that establishment, you're not doing it for yourself, but you're doing an extension for your country. And like John F. Kennedy said, ask not what? Ask not. I hope I get this right. Ask not what your country could do for you, but what can I do for my country?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was very excellent observation that you did.
Thank you very much. Thank you, sir. Absolutely. I think it's people want to belong, and they want to belong to something that is big, that is grand, but that is purposeful, you know? And for me, I grew up knowing that I belonged to something that was great and grand and purposeful, and not wanting, a part of it was good old shame, you know, like they beat the shame into you. You don't want to be shamed of being on the outside. But a part of it is knowing that you are a part of something that is grand and purposeful, and you don't want to be on the outside of that, right? And so there are some things about gang culture that we can take for the good, and then the rest of these things y'all keep perpetuating on these people, we got to throw away. And it's pervasive and it's everywhere. Let's get to another caller. Mark, good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Green.
Hey, good morning. How you do?
Yeah, I'm all right. And good morning, Mr. Mark Palmer.
Hey, morning.
Yeah, thanks for talking about the international health regulations and the scamdemic treaty, right? You know, I think I'm the first person to mention this on Guardian, because I haven't heard anybody talking about it. As a matter of fact, when you had Paho on the radio last week, I already mentioned it. I wanted to know if he voted no or yes. But of course he voted yes, because the plantation is becoming pathetic. Now, China voted against it, of course. Brazil, Russia, Taiwan, I think there's a number of countries, and also the African states. Thank God for them, right? But the thing is, what you must realize is that China, they're in bed with China as far as this not disclosing the protein sequences of the virus during the initial stages of the scamdemic, right? Now, what you must realize is the international health, China hire American lab regulators to come in and regulate the lab. And before the pandemic, there were many reports written about the haphazard irregularities, biohazard irregularities at this laboratory. So this outbreak is nothing new. The fact that they suppressed the lab leak hypothesis and supported the zoonotic hypothesis shows you the manipulation of the science. Now, even though they're saying all this, no one has read, no one has the gonads to read nothing released from Pfizer clinical trials, information that I was given out before because I had exposed it from the James Corbett report. But people did dismiss everything that I said. But these things, I spoke of these things almost a year ago or more.
All right, 52, I'm going to call you. We're going to organize a show.
Obfuscation is the order of the day. When I spoke about spontaneous abortions, all of these things have been uncovered when you went down a rabbit hole in a clinical trial. All of this data is out there. Aaron,
right.
You're even getting different information on DuckDuckGo. I went on DuckDuckGo last night, and they said that I was being tracked by Microsoft and Google because of the type of stuff I'm Googling. I'm telling you, all right?
I got you.
You got different figures on DuckDuckGo. Have a good day.
Yeah, man. I'm 52. We got to plan out a show. It's not that obfuscation is the order of the day, right? It's that to do the work that you are doing, a lot of us have to prep. We have to prep our brains just to start doing what you're doing. The background and the context that you have that helps you understand the new information that you're delving into, right? Like, so it's complicated. But I'm serious. We're going to do this show. I got a whole bunch of, like, I got 85 segment ideas, Mark, that I want to throw out there, as well as 85 talking points.
It comes back to trust, you know, because do people trust the WHO? Because they did what was called an independent review into the lab leak theory, and they came back, and it was inconclusive. Then you find out half the people on that group were involved, were actually had conflicts within that industry, you know, and they were involved in the genetic manipulation, as your reader Chris. So there's a lack of trust. When they say they're going to do something independent, and then it becomes a farce, you know, that leads to more conspiracy theories, of course.
So it seems as if people all around the globe feel like they're being conked.
Well, the other thing, you know, the FDA was, they said because the vaccines were rolled out so quickly that they were going to be terribly transparent. But then they went to court. They tried to get 75 years to release the Pfizer data. 75 years. They lost the court case.
Man.
And they're having to, and that's a big red flag. If you're trying to withhold the registrational data that you relied on to give the emergency use approval, and then you try and leave it for 75 years. You see, people are going to go, well, come on, there's something, red flag, right?
And so whether you believe there's a conspiracy or not, we can start by asking people to separate, right, to separate politics and finance from global healthcare, right? Like at some point, the health of humanity and the health of the planet have to be more important than your politics or your economic games and gains, right? And both words. It just has to be. Otherwise, I'm going to feel like you think I'm a conk.
Yeah, you're being conked.
And you're going to try conk me. I got another caller on the line, Mark. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning, Aaron. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How you do?
Yeah, Aaron. And good morning to you again.
Yes, sir.
Aaron, as the Ministers of Road Observation, right?
Oh, boy. Yes, sir.
Yes. Your observations driving around, a little disappointed at you. You're just looking straight ahead, back and forth on the sides, right? You're never looking up, man. Aaron.
Yes.
At the point, that parking lot.
Yes.
I mean, like, apparently I was riding faster, right? And some say look up. I'm looking up. I'm a builder, right? I'm looking up at the columns, right?
Uh-huh.
And when you get to the beam, every single beam is already stress cracked. I say, let me hear it move from this.
No, man, you can't see that. What type of eyes you have?
A builder's eye. Okay.
There you go. There you go.
I see structural stress.
Okay, but so let's pause right here.
Yeah.
The point is made. The point is made. Because, you know, this is, I scared of plenty of things. I scared of pinches and I scared of getting sued. But wow. You know, one of the things I want to talk about today, the conversation sort of went to the right, which is fine, right? The conversation goes where it goes, but I have a headline here, rain, more rain, flooding, tornadic activity, and hurricane season. And I was sitting thinking to myself, you know what? It has rained every holiday weekend for 400,000 years on these islands, right? How is it that people are still...
You're right, it did last year too, right?
Yeah. People are still waking up surprised that water is wet.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it rains, it's going to flood. And that if the Ministry of Public Works is not constantly maintaining sewer systems, that it's going to flood. And I'm sort of stunned. And I understand why young people are scared, why they're leaving, why they're extricating themselves from this place. Because did y'all forget that... The scientists have been saying that sea levels are going to rise now for the last 50 years. They've been telling us this. Did we forget that hurricane season starts every June 1st and gets earlier and earlier every year? I mean, it's one of the things I wanted to touch down. Did you see the video of the waterspout tornado in PI?
Amazing. Literally must have been like 30 feet away from the person who was shooting it, right?
Right.
That was pretty spooky.
Yeah. Producer, that's the song, Sailing in Nassau Harbor, when I thought of the tornado, right? That tornado was wailing in Pawniski P.I. Harbor, right? And that's a...
Never seen that before.
And for
you
many people...
You ever seen anything like that? I mean, I see him out on the beach, you know, you're looking out way into the distance and you can see a spout.
Yeah.
The cloud just comes down, touches the water, and boom, the spout. I've seen that in the Family Islands, but never.
Well, week before last, we had a water spout kiss the lip of the land at Traveler's Rest.
Oh, wow.
On West Bay Street,
you
know, leading out to the Western Road. And that was very recently. So when PAHO was on, you know, that's why I made the point to include tornadic activity in the questions about disaster preparedness, because they are increasing, and I'm not certain... We're prepared for it. You know how I know we're not prepared for it, Mark? Because ain't nobody selling ponchos, raincoats, water boots as if they are a everyday regular necessity like toilet paper, right? Because we live in a archipelago, a group of islands, low-lying, shallow water islands, rising sea levels, and a hurricane season that comes every year. They're more regular than the time.
Without fail.
Right? In fact, there are two things that are certain in life, death and hurricanes. If you're in the Bahamas, not necessarily the tax man, depending on who you are, how rich you are, what the color of your
That's
skin.
True.
Right? But hurricanes definitely are coming. And so are we prepared for this? We had a weekend full of festivities, regattas. Event organizers prepared for this? Do we have the structural resources and tools in place to ensure that events can continue throughout the rain? Do we have shuttles for vehicles, shuttles for parking, right?
You know when that's going to be really significant? Next year. With our 50th anniversary celebrations, we're going to have to get that straight.
Absolutely.
Because plenty of people are going to be coming.
Absolutely.
To celebrate with us.
And listen, I know y'all not going to wear Crocs for the prince. I mean, the prince, right? Soon to be king. I know y'all not going to do that, right? I'm not sure what happened. See, and I'm torn about that. Did you see the pictures, Mark? In fact, you see the pictures of the parade, I think the presentation of something. It was an informal, formal presentation. The female officer was wearing Crocs. And I ran hot for sex. Why? It's like that's like letting Bank Freed do the groundbreaking in shorts and dirty tennis. You just have what you need, whether they could pay for it or not. But then I thought, wait, but we live in a hurricane zone. In the middle of a weather storm, right? That perhaps every officer should have a weather outfit, a water outfit. Mm-hmm. And perhaps Crocs. No, maybe not Crocs.
Maybe not Crocs.
But maybe some water boots, right? And look at the levels at which we are not prepared. We are not prepared for this new dispensation, for this new season of rain all the time, rising sea levels, flooding all the time. And nobody's ready, right? There are very few, certainly not sufficient covered bus stops. Right? Buses don't run on a schedule. They don't feel they need to. sidewalks are not high enough. There's obviously insufficient drainage. Nobody is cleaning the drains. Nobody is doing proper tree maintenance to ensure there's minimal debris to clog up the drains. Nobody has, I mean, I don't know where y'all are, but nobody's come from my neighborhood. None of the utility companies have come through to do the pre-storm maintenance. I'm not saying that you've ever done that. I mean, I know you're supposed to do that, right? The landscaping teams are not prepared. I mean, the extent to which we are not prepared to live in the tropics, where it rains constantly, things are overgrown, there's storms, we don't have any water catchment systems. I just wonder.
All that good water going in the ground, right?
I mean, yeah. All at one time. And see, the problem is all at one time. If I have a water storage, like a catchment system, you know, Bahamians can say, oh, well, it raining, I don't need your water now. It's for when it's for when there's a drought, though, people, right? The farmers are going to need it. The farmers need it when regular people don't need excess water. But it's like we just realizing that water is wet. And I understand why young people are leaving in droves. Producer, if the caller is there, if we could take them for you got 30 seconds, caller, you're on the clock.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yes. Thank you for accepting my call. I was listening to your show and enjoying it as usual. You did mention the young officer who had on the green truck.
Yes.
Did you see her explanation?
No, I didn't.
In fact, she said, and it's be worthy of note, that she said that she was given permission to wear that, and she showed where there was some blister on her heels that came as a result of her walking in the procession for some 2.6 miles or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a plausible explanation if that is the case. And she did show the picture. It'll be good for you to see it because some, let's face it, she has gotten the angst or the ire of many Bahamians. Why are you dressed like that?
Mm-hmm.
But there is a reason, you know, according to her.
Absolutely.
So you ought to put that in.
No, man.
Close that gap. Now, as to the other fellow who wasn't properly dressed, we don't know, but at least there was an explanation for her. So, say that, please.
Absolutely. So, we've learned that a statement has been released from the officer in the Crocs explaining that she had injured her feet on the march, on the parade, and she was given permission to wear those Crocs. The point I was also making is that perhaps that she was doing the very right thing, wearing weather-appropriate clothing, right? And that it is not her that is wrong, but her employers, right? And that's sort of the space we started off in, which is that they should always have shoes that accommodate that type of service. If they're on a parade, that they should have shoes that look like dress shoes but perform like athletic shoes, right? And it's their employer that ensures that happens. Just as we close out the show, I had a situation where I was stopped by a police officer, took my license, walk around the corner, no uniform number, no bicycle, no car, no radio, no nothing. Just took my driver's license, took out his cell phone, walk around the corner having a conversation on his cell phone. When a senior officer came on the scene, I made the point that I don't even know who this officer is. He has no identifying marks on him, identifiers. And the senior officer said, well, what, you want him to be cold? That's the only sweater he have. And I thought to myself, no, the force issues a uniform. They are responsible for him being properly uniformed when he is on duty. And so while we're going to get mad at these workers, we're going to encourage them to do better, but we lay the blame at the employer who is responsible for creating a livable, a workable working space. If you're going to force us to live on a plantation, you're going to make it livable. Anyway, Mark, it was a broad and wide conversation. Thank you for sticking in with me. Thank you for the audience for staying tuned in. I wish I could make you play hooky tomorrow and come join me on the show. We're not going to go play no hockey. I don't have insurance for that. Thank you, producer. We got to go. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM is up next. You've been on the clock with Erin Green. Have a great day, Bahamas.